Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, announcements, stuff, things, oh my, loud noises, at facebook.com/ballisticradio. So, we're going to have one of my favorite people is going to be on the show here in just a little bit, which I think I said last episode, so I probably need to come up with like a better segue in between the intro and the first segment ad. Don't you think, Joe? Joe's nodding his head. But I'm just, you know what? I'm just going to pull the ripcord on this, abort, and hey, guess what? This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep, ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. Remember, unless you're on fire or drowning or, I don't know, something else, you can never really have too much ammo. So, joining us today, it's John Correa from Active Self-Protection. John, how's it going?
And every day's a holiday. Every meal's a feast. How are you, John?
I can't complain. I just want to be like, doctor, doctor, doctor. There's too many Johns on this doctor show right now. So for those that don't know, and I would suspect that most of the people listening will probably know because YouTube and all that is so big, so hot right now. Who are you and what do you do? And we'll go from there.
Well, my name is John Correa, and I talk while people get mugged on the internet. I own Active Self-Protection. If you know me, you know me from my YouTube channel, Active Self-Protection. Every day, people send me real life surveillance of armed robberies, carjacking, mugging, stabbing, homicides, and I do after action reports on them. So we walk through what happened, and then we walk back through and think about lessons learned for self-defenders. We do mostly surveillance videos, some edge cams as well. Those are becoming much more prolific now. And I use those to be more evidence-based as a defensive trainer. So I teach mostly handgun skills, but also some empty-handed skills around the country.
Nice. Nice. So I have to say, it's been incredibly impressive to watch you develop yourself and the channel over the last 5-6 years or so. So you started in 2013, I want to say, right?
So the business really started, I mean, as any kind of entity in 2011, and then I started the Facebook page in 2013, really started the YouTube channel in 2016, so it is coming up on 3 years that we've been working the YouTube channel, and this depends on when you want to say things really started, because I really started the social presence on Facebook rather than on YouTube, so narrated video started on Facebook in 2014, so we've been doing them for about 4.5 years, and when we switched over to YouTube in 2016, it really went kind of bonkers.
So, yeah, so you've had, like, a tremendous amount of growth in interest in the YouTube page, and I really think that the format that you sort of pioneered, I think that's a fair word, has really done a lot for the community in general, and especially in the non-gun people world, like helping them understand kind of what we're about. And when I say we, I mean the, you know, our subset of the community, as far as the, you know, not gun people, because I don't think that's accurate, but maybe personal protection people. And just guns happen to be involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that my big mission is to be more evidence-based. And so as a trainer, right, as somebody who is a self-defender, I carry a firearm everywhere I'm legally allowed to, and I want my personal use and training with a firearm to be evidence-based. So what do I need to be able to do and why? And so that's where it all came from, and then trying to help other people see that. And we do get to reach across the aisle quite a bit to people who aren't self-defenders, who are like, well, I just, you know, I didn't like guns, but then I started watching your channel and I realized, wow, they really can be helpful as tools. And that's really helpful. And I think the gun folk, like you're talking about, we try to dispel the Hollywood myths too, because even in that subset, there's a lot of people that are like, well, you know, gunfights happen like John Wick. And yeah, we're like, not really. That's really not how things go, but here's how they really go.
Well, and that's kind of something too, because I keep, you know, so you've been through both of the classes that I teach now at this point, and thank you very much for your time coming out to those.
One of the best classes I've had.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that. But it's you know, as you know, at least especially in the Armed Parent class, context is a huge driver for that. And it seems like a lot of conversations that happen inside of the, you know, inside of the greater community are very not context driven, and sort of like the idea of like, hey, if you don't have a, you know, 18 rounds in your gun and a reload and, you know, body armor in your vehicle, you're going to get killed in the streets. Have you noticed a lot of that?
Yes, maimed upon the thoroughfare, right? You know, of course, and people. Everybody has their loadout is the minimum loadout. It's also the maximum loadout. And, you know, I always tell folks, look, carry what you want. I don't care. You know, I'm not going to be at your fight. You're not going to be at mine. Do what you think is best. I have rationale for what I carry. But, you know, I mean, listen, the reality is almost any gun will do in a gunfight at the end of the day. Now, there are some outliers there that it's not, but almost anyone, when they're getting shot at, decides they have better things to do during the day, and they don't check caliber or capacity when things start going wrong. And so I don't say that to say, you know, carry a little, you know, 32 Jennings or something, because that may not be your best choice. But I don't really care. I mean, I'm a gear agnostic. I'm like, carry what you want. If you come to class with a, you know, a really not so great gun, great. I'm going to teach you with that gun. We might talk about it if it has problems, but I mean, I had students come to class and shoot a 350-round class with a Ruger LCP. Would I recommend that? No, that's going to be a miserable day. But she did it, and okay, rock and roll.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think one of the biggest moments for me was watching the female restaurant owner have three dudes break into her house, and there's video of this. And she chases them out of the house, firing a high point one-handed. Like, you can see it clear as day. Kills one of the dudes dead right there on the driveway. And it's amusing to me, because there are plenty of places you could go to on the internet where they'd be like, well, you can't successfully defend yourself with this firearm or whatever. And it's like, well, violence of action, violence of action and aggression make up for a lot.
Yeah, it really does. And attitude is always primary, right? So if you're willing to do the work, then that really goes a long way. And I see people, you know, this is like another one that we see in Tulsa. There was a liquor store robbery with a guy who came in, and a mom and a daughter that were a man in the store. And boy, they did everything wrong, but they had a heart to win. And so eventually they're able to win over this guy, even though I think they had a 5-shot revolver and a 380 single stack were the two guns that they had with them. And he had, I think, a shotgun, in fact. So, I mean, you know, we can talk about best equipment, and I think that's not a bad thing to talk about. But, of course, you know, a mindset, gun handling, marksmanship are all way more important than equipment selection. That's the last thing, but it's the one we like to talk about. And I will tell you, on my second channel, when I do skill-based videos where I talk about, hey, here's how to build this skill, here's how to get better with your handgun or whatever, those get far fewer views than when I say, here's this new holster or here's this gun or here's, you know, this piece of equipment and whether or not it's good. Those get way more traction because people like to talk about that stuff because that's something they can get immediately versus doing the work of getting better.
Well, and yeah, I even think there's more to it than that. But we got to go to break. So right now we're talking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and the scattergun since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooter, 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. And, you know, you were discussing where, hey, this way to get better, that doesn't get as much engagement as, hey, here's this thing that you can buy right now. And I wonder, too, if how much of that is, and I'm off the cuff here, so I haven't really considered this a ton, but I'd like to have a conversation about it. I wonder how much of that is the fact that people want to control what they feel is easy to control, and very few people anymore have exerted any sort of disciplined anything onto their lives before, and they don't feel that they're able to control something like my ability to improve my own skill level. I don't know. What do you think?
I certainly think that's part of it. I mean, you know, as somebody who played in high school and collegiate athletics, and you got to push through that initial, you know, competent problem, that conscious incompetence. And that's hard for a lot of us because it takes a lot of work. And it's difficult to do or in some sense because you got to be willing to be a beginner. You know, when I started martial arts training, when you show up and you put a white belt on and you get your butt whooped, that's hard emotionally to do. And not a lot of us, I think, are willing to do that and willing to sit in that uncomfortable space to get better. And that's in almost any endeavor. Why don't more people, you know, go get an advanced degree or step out and run their own business? Why don't most people push through the discomfort to have a really, really great relationship with their spouse? I think it takes being willing to be comfortable being uncomfortable and do work, and that takes self-discipline, and it takes a willingness to, you know, forego immediate gratification. And, you know, I mean, I think immediate gratification is unfortunately one of America's highest values.
No.
That's what our economy is based on for sure.
Well, you know, and as someone that has I've certainly had my own part in feeding that machine, so I don't know that I want to throw any stones right now. But, you know, like, so oddly enough, like, I can think back of the hardest thing that I have done in the last 5 or 6 years. And the hardest thing that I've done in the last 5 or 6 years is consciously make an effort to be nicer to people. And, you know, and if anyone's ever, like, followed me for a while or listen to the show for a while, hopefully you can notice a difference in tone with how I interact with people. And like, that was a conscious decision. And it wasn't easy because, you know, it's very, I think we fall into these habits. And I'm curious as far as, you know, when people start talking about skill development or, even the gear selection question, like the overall overarching theme of that seems to be, I'm trying to control this thing that I feel is not easy to control. And the only way that I can control it is by throwing equipment at it, you know, hardware solutions versus software solutions. And it seems like the answer is generally a software solution, not a hardware solution.
Hardware is important too at some level. I mean, obviously, when you get to a certain level of skill, those things matter. You know, a professional golfer needs a particular quality of golf club in order to maximize their ability, right?
Agreed.
So, but your basic, you know, schlub club player like I was, you know, a guy who's running an 18 or a 25 handicap, you're not going to get better by buying a new set of irons. It's just not where your improvement's going to come from.
Right.
You've got to put in the work. So, and you know, guys like you who have an incredibly high level of skill, yeah, at some level the equipment is going to matter because of the small differences and the small improvements that are going to make. But, I mean, for most folks, it's just getting out there and doing their dry fire work and being willing to get to the range and not just turn money into smoke and noise. But, of course, I think a lot of people, they enjoy the view from Mount Stupid.
Uh-huh.
And that Dunning-Kruger curve, you know, they sit on top of that and they know more than nothing and they feel pretty good. I can do a little bit and I know a little bit. And so, look, I'm really good. But, man, sliding down that mountain is really scary because you pick up speed and your confidence just goes right to heck.
Yeah.
Because you end up at the bottom of the mountain going, wow, I know even more and now I know nothing and I have nothing. And this is a scary place to be. And you know, that was my journey with handgun use is that I bought a gun. I took my CCW because I had several reasons for it. And for a while it just sat on my hip as a lucky rabbit's foot. It was a magic talisman that warded away danger. And, I'm sure your cultured and reasoned, listeners will laugh with me when I say my first carry gun was an XD in 40 caliber loaded with MagSafe defenders.
Nice.
And yeah, wow, right? Yeah, way to go, Korea. Ouch. But, and then as I started training and realized at some point, I was like, wow, man, I really actually better start training with this thing. Well, then, gosh, let's do a little bit of research and let's start to really kind of think about, is this working well for me? Is this helping me or not? And then as my skill level came up, then my equipment choices started going, well, is this leather pancake outside the waistband holster the best choice for me right now? Is where I'm carrying the gun helping me in my goals or not? Is this particular firearm the right choice for me? In particular, for me, I went from a 40 cal to a 9mm and had good success there. I know it's going to get me killed in the streets carrying 9mm, but whatever. So I think when you go through those particular means and as that journey progresses, it's a scary ride for a while. And a lot of people shy away from that.
Well, and so here, my first carry gun would have, was a Glock 21 SF, with 185 grain double tap, gold dots and excess big dot sights.
What I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah. God, I don't even let's not. You know what, John? Let's go somewhere else with this, right? Yeah, man. It's certainly a path. And it's and you're right. Go ahead.
To me, for that is what you were talking about. You know, you made a conscious decision, and I certainly noticed it as your friend over the last year and a half or so. So you said, "Look, I'm just going to interact with people in a nicer way." I know you made the same decision that you made it before I did when you said, "Hey, I'm going to lose some weight. I'm going to get in better shape. I'm going to be more productive for my family." Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. And I think sometimes I get to a place where what I fight is knowing that other people could make the same decision that I could and go in the same direction if they wanted to, is honoring where they are in their journey and not forcing them down mine. So I see somebody who's not maybe carrying the best gear, maybe their skill set's not as high as it could be, maybe they're struggling with their weight or whatever, and I go, look, they're going to have to get to their place in their journey. And so I just got to honor where they are in their journey and let them be. And if they want help, I'll help them. I can kind of, lay out some path markers for them, but only when they're ready for that.
Well, and so this is where we get to here's the hard part, right? At what point do you go, okay, that's where they're at, and if they're happy there, they're happy there, versus that's where they're at, they're happy there, and they are trying to infect everyone else with where they are at. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like the aggressively, and I'm going to say it, and like, I don't mean it to sound as negative as it does, because I'm really trying to avoid negativity these days, which is weird, but anyway, like just aggressively ignorant people. Like aggressively ignorant. For instance, like I posted a video of one of the drills that, one of the assessments that I run in in the one-day technical shooting class that I do. And for anyone that's run it before, they, you know, has personally witnessed it or tried it, they're like, wow, that was a really good run. And I'm like, yes, yes, it was. I feel pretty good about this. And I had somebody say, you know, standing that way, a gust of wind would blow you over. And I'm just like, if you want to... You know, if you want to come try blowing me over, I guess we'll see what happens. You know what I mean, though? It's like, it's hard not to be negative to that.
Yeah, and listen, especially on YouTube, for instance, man, we have taken this thing. I mean, I get, around 3,000 comments a day on the main YouTube channel right now. And we have a couple of people who help moderate.
Hold that thought, because we're going to have to go to break in like 30 seconds, and I would rather just like pause you now and go, hey, we're going to come back and whatever. But we're talking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment also brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the 1200 lumen EDCL 2T handheld or 500 lumen EDCL 1T handheld to the 650 lumen stiletto pocket light, or 1,000 lumen upgraded X300 Ultra, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell Aziz light ever again. Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. So we're talking with John Correa, and you were saying on your YouTube channel, you get about 3,000 comments a day.
Please, yeah, something like that.
Please continue.
Well, and so, you know, some of those are just people wanting to comment and say hi or whatever, or talk their own opinion, fine. People who are asking genuine questions or disagreeing in genuine ways, no problem. And we'll interact with those. But trolls, I ban racists and misogynists and a couple other things too. I just don't have time for that. But trolls, I have a policy. If you're going to clap, you better be ready for a clap back. If you're going to be, what you said, aggressively ignorant and mean-spirited about it, well, then I have no patience for that. Because especially in places where you're hiding behind a username. So, you know, I don't mind saying, look, I'm not the place for everyone. And if you're going to be aggressively ignorant, like I have a couple on the second channel in particular about a couple of pieces of gear that I find to be particularly egregiously bad. And I don't generally, you know, make videos about bad equipment. I'd rather make videos about good equipment. But there's a couple of things that are so popular that I've made videos that I've said, look, this is not good. And here's why it's not good. And you want to stay away from it. And the fans of that piece of equipment, the aggressive level of ignorance in some of them, it frustrates me. And so when they come aggressively ignorant and mean-spirited about it, I don't mind clapping back. I don't mind saying, hey, look. If you want to have a little verbal judo match, let's go, because we can do that and be safe on the internet or whatever. But thankfully, I think most people are not quite that way, and those folks are too many, but not as many as could be.
So here's my other question to you, I guess. If you had to codify here's the bare minimum, and I'd be curious to compare like where we're at with this. But if you had to codify a bare minimum of here's stuff you should probably have on you, what would that look like?
Well, I mean, it depends on where you are, John, because what I can have on me when I am at home in Phoenix, Arizona, is very different than what I can have on me. My wife and I like to travel internationally. So when we go to Thailand or we're looking at going to Bali, Indonesia this year, or when we're in Mexico or, you know, we're in Panama. When I was in Panama, what I could carry was significantly different than when I'm home. So what's the bare minimum? I always carry my first aid kit with me. I always have my first aid kit on me because you can carry that anywhere. Literally nowhere on earth is it going to give you any trouble at all to have a first aid kit. And I've used it to save lives. Before, I don't know about that. That may have been an overstatement. I use it to help people who were in real trouble while we were waiting for the professionals to show up.
Sure.
And so that to me is an absolute necessity. I always think I always want to have my cell phone on me because if I can call and get help, that's a good thing. I was, you know, maybe it's just the military guy in me back in the old country, but I keep a pen on me all the time and a big and the brightest flashlight I can on me all the time because I want to be able to see things. And when it gets dark, that gets miserable. So, I mean, those are kind of bare minimums. Do I want more than that? Sure. But I'm going to tell you, if I'm walking around Chiang Mai in Thailand and for some reason things go south and the Thai police catch me, you know, carrying my folding knife, I can end up in a Thai jail. And that's not a place you want to be.
Right.
So some people say, well, I don't care and I'm going to carry it anyways. Okay. I have friends I know who go to California and they go, well, I don't care if I get caught carrying a gun in California. You know, I'll just deal with it. Okay, that's your prerogative, and I totally get that. For me, I go, you know, the headline of, you know, pastor and YouTube celebrity arrested on gun charges just doesn't pass the sniff test. So, you know, there's a difference between what I want to have on me, what I really work to have on me, and what I say, nah, I have to keep this with me all the time. And, I mean, when I was going scuba diving in Phuket, I mean, what did I have on me? That was actually my best day of carrying defensive tools in Thailand because I was diving. I could carry a dive knife.
Right.
Yay! But I couldn't carry a whole lot of the other stuff. It sat in a bag on the boat.
Well, and that's I think that's oftentimes overlooked. And I know Claude Werner has done an incredible job of discussing, like, you know, not everybody can dress like a professional gun person.
I'm good at tactical hobo, you know, because I work for myself and there's no negative repercussions for me if somebody finds out that I'm carrying a gun. In fact, I mean, what I do for a living, everybody assumes I'm carrying a gun and they're usually right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's not the case for everyone.
Well, and that's a lot of people miss out on that. But so that was a very good it depends answer. But let's say I was going to paint you into a corner. And okay. I was going to make you say, all right, I'm in an environment where a firearm is acceptable. Everything else is acceptable. What would a bare minimum, like, I feel good with this as a place to start. Where would that be for you?
I mean, if we're talking bare minimums and everything is on the table, I would definitely, of course, like to have my first aid kit. I'd still like to have some kind of first aid kit on me because of how often I feel like as soon as I got medical training and carried some equipment on me, I'm always the first one to show up to a car wreck now.
Yep.
It's like, you know, the law of attraction or something. Like, they show up all the time, and that's important to be ready for. So I'd say first aid kit of some capacity somewhere nearby all the time. If a gun is acceptable and possible in your world, yes, carry a gun. Now, what's the minimum? No, that's the minimum. Carry a gun. If that means an LCR in 22, okay. If that's the best that you can get, okay. Would I like more? Sure. But carry a gun. Even a 5-shot snubby revolver is going to solve an awful lot of problems for you. There would be that. Now, if you're going to carry a gun, I would say, gosh, man, from there, I really kind of feel like, I know you said it depends and you don't want that answer, but I can get away with things as somebody who really trains with my hands that somebody who doesn't or can't for whatever reason may not be able to get away with. So I might say, okay, I can get away with having the gun because my answer between a strong word and a gun is my hand.
Right.
Whereas somebody else may not be able to. And if they don't have those skills, then I'd really say you really want to have an intermediate force option, something like a pepper spray. Now, I do carry a pepper spray every day because I want to have other options too. But if you don't have a highly developed empty-handed skill set, then I definitely think something, you know, a long-distance eye poke like that is a really important thing to get you out of trouble.
Right.
So those would be what I would definitely strongly encourage at a minimum.
Well, and yeah, okay. I'm good with that. So it's kind of funny, like, and I think I said this in class, like, if I were dictator of the world, all of a right. sudden everyone would be mandated to carry a tourniquet on their person. I think that'd be cool. I think pepper spray is a better option for at least half of the people that decide to arm themselves.
I think you're right. I think if you're not willing to be competent with that tool, and the pepper spray will solve a lot more problems. I mean, a firearm is a unitasker. It handles an aggravated assault and up only.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very limited use tool, whereas I can pepper spray somebody with far less justification than shooting them.
Right.
And it'll get me out of a lot more. And, you know, you go read the FBI Uniform Crime Report, 80% of assaults every year in America are simple assaults, not aggravated assaults. So the gun's not going to be of use there. So four chances in five, if you're involved in a physical violent altercation, the pepper spray is going to be a useful tool where the gun's not.
Well, and to be clear, too, I'm not saying that people, like, you know, I'm one of the shall not be infringed purists. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be allowed to make that choice. I'm just saying for most people, it might not be the best option. Now we got to go to break. When we get back, we will talk more about, I don't know, whatever we come up with. But right now we're talking with John Crea from Active Self-Protection. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by BigTexOutdoors.com. BigTexOutdoors.com is the best place for you to find all your everyday carry needs at the absolute best prices. Maybe you need all the lumens from Surefire at the lowest price? No problem. Spend too much time alone in your room and need an RMR now? BigTexOutdoors.com has those. Glock accessories? Yes! Fast, cheap shipping, 100% hassle-free returns, all that and more. And best of all, BigTexOutdoors.com has Ike. He's a good man and thorough. I like Ike. Everybody likes Ike, and you'll like Ike, too. Visit BigTexOutdoors.com today and find out what happens when every customer is a friend, not just an order. So we're talking with John Crea from Active Self-Protection, and I've realized I've made a statement that someone will take out of context and, like, yell at me for. Like on the internet. I think I made the internet angry. They just don't know it yet. What do you think, John? Like maybe?
I mean, you're going to make people angry on the internet. That's life. You know? If your goal is to keep everyone happy on the internet, the only way you're going to do that is by logging off.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Well, and it's okay. I don't really care too much what other people think anymore. It's been really nice.
I've adopted Dr. Brené Brown's approach that you get a 1-inch square that you can write down the names of everyone whose opinion matters to you. And that's the only people whose opinion is allowed to matter is who is on that 1-inch square.
I'll have to try that. Anyway, man, this has turned into like a weird self-help episode, and I don't know, might be a little too trippy for people.
A little touchy-feely.
Be interesting. This could be a podcast idea when you have like an agnostic and a Christian have a podcast about, you know, self improvement. Like, how would that work? I'd actually maybe listen to that anyway. Separate for when the whole gun thing goes down the tubes. So yeah, man, what else do you think? You've reviewed a lot of video. I noticed that neither one of us mentioned carrying a reload. Do you want to talk about that for a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I can. Okay, so between the two channels, or between the big channel and the Facebook page, we have about 1,600 narrated videos right now, probably watched somewhere 16 to 18,000 defensive gunfights. And I'm not saying reloads are unimportant, and I don't tell people not to carry a reload. You knock your socks off. I've just never seen a reload actually make any difference in a non-on-duty law enforcement gunfight.
Yes.
On-duty cops reload all the time, and because of the way that their gunfights start and end. They have to pursue fights a lot farther.
Right.
But CCW gunfights end when contact breaks. That's really what you're using your defensive firearm for, is to break contact with somebody who means you a deadly threat. So those happen quick. They go about 5 seconds, and pretty much – whatever's in the gun is what you're going to use in that moment. And almost always the guys that I see carrying reloads are carrying guns with at least a capacity of 10. And that's about all you're going to get out in the gunfight, because by the time the reload comes in, I've seen it 3 or 4 where somebody actually did reload, but by the time they got the gun back in the fight was over.
Right.
So I'm not saying don't carry a reload, and I get it. People say, well, I want to carry a reload for malfunction clearance or because the magazine might be bad. My answer to that is I carry a really high-quality magazine that I've vetted and know works, and I don't train with that magazine. That magazine is treated like a queen. Mm-hmm. And I personally carry a higher capacity firearm. If I could carry 110 and up, I'd be perfectly comfortable with that. I carry a 15 plus one personally.
Oh.
And because you're going to fight with what's in the gun. I think reloading is cool because you're going to do it every class. You're going to do it on the range. You're going to do it in competition. And so it's not a skill to not work on. I've been working on my reloads a little bit here because of the number of classes that I've been taking. I've been trying to get where I can freaking win a fast coin, and that reload kills me.
Right.
But, you know, as far as a defensive handgunning skill, I think that in defensive gunfighting, reloading is an administrative action, which is why I like Tom Gibbons' proactive reload. Okay, the gunfight's over. I have not just a lull, but I think things are going, you know, are done, but I want to top my gun off. Okay, fine. Now's the time to do a reload, and that's a proactive reload if you want to carry one. Me, personally, I don't generally carry a reload.
Yeah. I go through phases. It's like, well, and usually when I carry one, it's because I'm testing something. Like, I'm seeing if, hey, does this new carry method, does this work? Or I might have a gun on that if I weren't being paid to switch guns as often as I am paid to switch guns, it's not that I wouldn't have any problem carrying it, but I might not be carrying it as soon as I am. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think the other thing, too, is like a lot of people, I know at least in the past, people have like looked at what I've done as far as like a roadmap. Well, John does this, so I should do this. Like, no, don't do what I do. This is wrong. You don't want to do that. But left to my own devices, I don't carry one very often because, like you said, I haven't seen any instances where it mattered. There's one that's a maybe, but there were so many other factors involved in that that I don't know that it actually mattered or not. And that was shooting. I want to say it was in Texas, but gentleman engaged from behind a vehicle, put rounds into this dude that was wearing body armor. Dude falls down. Guy's gun is empty. He comes out from behind cover, and that's when the dude shoots him. And, like, there are so many other issues there that,
right?
You know,
well,
yeah.
And my thing is that if you're going to carry a reload, great. I have literally no problem with it. I would suggest, though, if you are carrying a reload and don't have space for things like your less lethal tool, like an OC spray, or you don't have room for a flashlight, or you don't have room for a tourniquet or a first aid kit, then I would personally suggest that you reprioritize your space commitments.
Right.
I use my flashlight almost every day. And that tool as an awareness tool, as a beacon of I am not easy meat, is, I think, more useful on a much more regular basis than the reload. If you can carry both, hey, rock on. I mean, I do the tactical hobo thing, and if you can do the tactical hobo thing, rock and roll. But if you're in a professional environment, the other part of that is I've never had anybody give me a hard time about having a flashlight on me. I carry that on airplanes. I can carry that with me in Thailand. I can carry that, you know, any country that I've been to. So I find it a much more universally helpful thing. But if you can do that and a reload, rock on, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, at the end of the day, too, it's funny because, and you sort of alluded to this, the amount of concern that people have for what other people are doing. It's like, I wouldn't tell you which underwear to wear. I would hope you wouldn't tell me which underwear to wear. Why on earth would I,
right,
you know, insert myself into a decision that is almost as highly personal as that? You know, I don't know.
Right.
People are goofy. We got a few minutes left. What's something you would like people to know?
You know, the biggest thing that I see all the time is that, you know, people assume someone else will come and step in and help them. But the reality is no one is coming to save you. The bystander effect is a real psychological phenomenon. Normalcy bias is a real psychological phenomenon. And there is a high likelihood that when your particular balloon goes up, you are coming to that fight with only what you have brought, and that's not just your equipment by any stretch. That is your experience, that is your skill set, and that is your mindset. So you have to be the one who is ready to protect yourself, however that looks. I mean, that's not always go to guns. You know, if your only answer is, I'm just going to shoot somebody, boy, there's an awful lot of problems that won't solve. We had a recent video on the channel of a young woman who this guy catcalls her, and she goes, hey, knock it off. And he decides to come up and smack her upside the head. Now, there's a lot of things I find morally objectionable in that video. But there were a whole bunch of people around. But guess what? None of them were able to stop him from smacking her upside the head. None of them were able to protect her in the moment from the problem that she faced. Only she could protect herself from that problem. And that's the case pretty much the world over, unless you have, you know, a vulnerable relative, a, you know, a special needs child or an elderly parent that you're the guardian of. No one's coming to save you. You better be ready to do it yourself.
Yeah. Well, and there's a quote, and then we got to go. No one's coming. It's up to us. Like, and I like that. I like that a lot. But anyway, we're at the end of the show. If you want to find out more about John, Active Self-Protection, you can find it on YouTube, on the Googles, on the Facebook. Brother, I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Man, I really enjoy talking to you all the time, John, and I really appreciate you, man.
Yeah, no worries, dude. You too. So, anyway, make sure you check out our website, BallisticRadio.com, like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. Keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps us out. And remember, you can get the show super quick on Spotify. It gets uploaded way faster than anywhere else these days. So, thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.